our own evil desires have their own way, the escalation of evil follows, with a possible outcome of self-destruction. Welcome everyone, I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. Well, yesterday, in part three of The Sovereign Hand of God, the stage was set for a strange and sudden turn of events. An ironic and unexpected twist to the story unfolds. Esther decides to abandon her fate to God and, armed by faith alone, takes the necessary action in order to bring about a reversal of fortunes. In just a moment, we learn what happens when Haman's evil desires have their own way with part four of The Sovereign Hand of God.
Hi there, everyone. It's great to have you with us as we move on to part four of this exciting story in the book of Esther, which we have entitled The Sovereign Hand. Part three yesterday was called Activation by Mordecai, because it was Mordecai who spurred Esther to act and to appeal to the king on behalf of her people. Part four today is entitled The Abolition of Haman, because that is where it will end, the end of Haman. So get ready for some ironic and unexpected twists to the story as it unfolds. When Esther appeared before the king and the golden scepter was extended to her to grant her grace and favor, all she requested was a simple invitation to a banquet that she would hold for the king and Haman. Chapter 5, verse 5 of the book of Esther. Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? It shall be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." We would have guessed that this would be the perfect time for Esther to bring out her true request, which is to spare her people and to save them from the intended destruction. After all, she had already delayed once by not presenting her request immediately and directly to the king. Surely this would be the way that serious business is usually done, over a good meal. And of course, the king knew that, and therefore he asked her again, "Surely you didn't risk your life to come before me without my asking you, just to invite Haman and myself for dinner. So what's the real agenda?" And Esther answered in verse 7, "My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." Now she is really keeping them in suspense by repeating the same request for her to host a second dinner tomorrow night just for the two of them, but making it quite clear this time that she would present her true petition tomorrow as the king has said. I'm really not sure who found it more agonizing, whether it was Haman and the king or for Esther and Mordecai, in suppressing their desperate appeal until now. To request for yet another time for a second dinner the next evening would have been something hard to do, because it meant holding back such a pressing petition. And humanly, it would have been quite impossible, but for the patience and the quiet confidence that comes from waiting and resting in God. Sometimes it is wise and right not to act hastily, but in quiet confidence and biding God's right time for His perfect work. This intermission between the first and the second banquets of Esther led to Haman's own house party. In verse 9 we read, "So Haman went out that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. And he sent and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and servants of the king." Verse 12, "Moreover, Haman said, 'Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me, to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow, I am again invited by her along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. And with that, we come to the end of the scene and the act in chapter 5. So what we see in chapter 5 are two scenes of house parties. One was Esther's first invitation to the king and Haman, and second was Haman's premature celebration with his own family and friends. And they provide the respective settings for the deliverance of Esther's people, as well as for the destruction of their enemies. Esther's disposition and her banquet was marked by a quiet spirit. She exuded patience as well as poise. On the other hand, Haman's house party was marked by disquiet. There was a sense of impatience and provocation. And the two atmospheres of these two house parties reflects greatly on the disposition of their respective hosts. One was led by the Spirit, while the other by Satan and the flesh. We have noted that this intermission between the first and second banquets of Esther led to Haman's own house party and the suggestion of his wife for the erection of the gallows for the purpose of putting Mordecai, who was Haman's arch enemy, to death. Haman was really having a mixed time between celebrating what he perceived to be his successes and at the same time commiserating with his family and friends about the perceived snub of Mordecai day by day. Haman was still dissatisfied, despite having had his way in persuading the king to issue the decree to destroy all of Mordecai's and Esther's people in due time. He could not wait till the end of the year, but he just had to immediately get rid of Mordecai. And to Haman, Mordecai was his daily thorn in the flesh, when he sat at the king's gate but refused to bow down to him. It is always characteristic of the lust of the flesh to have its own way now. And that was the trait that Haman exhibited. He had to get rid of Mordecai right away. An escalation of evil always follows whenever we let our own evil desires have their way, and it can self-destruct. Mordecai, on the other hand, was habitually found at the king's gate. We read of this repetitively, for example, in chapter 2, verse 19. Mordecai sat within the king's gate. And again in verse 21, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, that he discovered the plot by two of the king's servants to assassinate the king. And then again in chapter 3, verse 2, all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. And in chapter 4, when he was mourning over the decree to exterminate his people, we find the same thing in verse 2. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And when Esther sent her servant to look for Mordecai in the city square, there he was, in verse 6, in front of the king's gate. More than being found physically at the king's gate, Mordecai was always watching in prayer at the place of access and authority, at the gate of the king who rules from heaven. Chapter 6 begins with an appreciative act. It's an act by the king for Mordecai's help in the past. What had looked like an unrelated event at the end of chapter 2 now takes center stage as the tables were turned. Chapter 6 begins with the scene of the king having a sleepless night. Verse 1 of chapter 6. That night the king could not sleep, so one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. It was no coincidence, but by God's appointment, that the king decided on having his kingdom's chronicles read to him as bedtime reading instead of any other book. Perhaps it made him feel more at rest and assured to recollect some of his achievements and things that had happened in the kingdom. And when it came to the part where it was recorded that Mordecai had discovered of the plot to assassinate the king by two of the king's servants. He suddenly was convicted of his debt of gratitude, which he had not repaid. So he asked in verse 3, the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." You see, men may forget, but God has a book of remembrance for those who fear him, as it says in Malachi chapter 3 verse 16. Man may propose, but God disposes. Reading on from verse 4 of chapter 6. So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace. To suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So here comes evil Haman, fresh from his house party with his family and friends the night before, with the gallows all erected and the plot all planned to eliminate Mordecai. And all that remained was just for him to walk in casually and confidently to present his request to the king. But before he could utter a word, the king had summoned him. Verse 5, the king's servant said to him, "Haman is there, standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king asked him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" At this, his heart began to beat faster, and he must have been thinking to himself, "Things are really moving fast and furious in my favor these days." And in his mind's eye, he could just imagine all that the king is describing, applying to himself. Verse 7, and Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Well said, Haman, but alas, he could never have lavished such great honor on anyone else but himself. Or so he thought. And now comes the punchline that clinched the prize in verse 10. Then the king said to Haman, "Hurry, take the robe and the horse, as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken." Haman must have been terribly crestfallen and speechless. Verse 11, we read that Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on horseback through the city square and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor." Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. What a remarkable reversal of events! It is truly the Lord's doing and marvelous in our eyes, as the psalmist has said in Psalm 118, verse 23. Mordecai's elevation at the expense of Haman was really a bonus which was not asked for or expected at all by Mordecai. All this time, Mordecai was blissfully ignorant of what was happening in Haman's mind and in his camp. And similarly, Haman was totally ignorant of what had just transpired on that sleepless night with the king reading the chronicles that recorded Mordecai's good deed. What an ironic twist of circumstances. But from God's perspective, we see all the pieces of the jigsaw falling into place. What was recorded for us apparently as a parenthesis, something that just happened by the way and completely forgotten at the end of chapter 2, is now retrieved as the primary evidence for the reward and the promotion of Mordecai. Truly, this is the sovereign hand of him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, as Paul says in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. This shows the sovereign workings of God, who sees and who controls all things. It was Haman's plot versus God's plan, and no man can outwit God. We see here also the principle of retribution at work. It says in Romans chapter 12 verse 19, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." Again, in the Old Testament book of Job, chapter 5 verses 12 and 13, He frustrates the devices of the crafty, so that their hands cannot carry out their plans. He catches the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the cunning comes quickly upon them. What we observe here are two scenes of an astonishing night and day, beginning first with the king's sleeplessness and his recall of Mordecai's good deed late at night. And this was followed by Haman coming on his way to speak to the king the first thing in the morning about his great idea, actually his wife's idea, about hanging Mordecai on the gallows that they had erected. And this without realizing that the king had just been led the night before to remember Mordecai favorably and to appreciate the aid that he has given him in uncovering an assassination attempt. And what immediately followed was Mordecai's elevation and exaltation, which was carried out by Haman himself. The most ironical and comical scene is probably that of the king's dialogue with Haman. This was a classic case of talking about the same thing with completely different agendas, and it exemplifies the vast difference between God's thoughts and man's thoughts about who to exalt and to honor. The words of Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9, could well have been written large on this episode. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. When we become so self-absorbed as Haman was, it is easy to become self-deceived to the point of mistaking our thoughts and ways for God's thoughts and ways. There's such a great irony in the outcomes for Haman and for Mordecai. Mordecai got what he did not ask for and without having to do anything, while Haman did not get what he so desperately wanted despite scheming his utmost. What Haman desired most for himself was instead given to the one he hated most. Haman went home mourning and in shame. What an awful day it had been, but the worst was yet to come. Reading on, Esther chapter 6, verse 13. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him." Their words proved more prophetic than they realized. And while they were still talking with him, the king's servants came and hastened to bring Haman to the second banquet that Esther had prepared for them. By now, Haman was surely in no mood to attend Esther's second banquet that night. But perhaps something good might come out of it. Everything had happened so quickly in a single day, just as he had plotted for the extermination of Esther's people. So now it seems things are moving against him. Thus ends the scene and the act with Esther chapter 6. Chapter 7 of Esther opens with the scene of Esther's second dinner banquet. As the trigger event of chapter 6 was an appreciative act by the king of Mordecai's aid, so chapter 7 is really about the abrupt end of the wicked Haman. The plot thickens as the drama unfolds in this chapter. Esther chapter 7 verse 1. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day, at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom? It shall be done." Now comes the Esther moment. Things happen quickly once God's time and hour has arrived. The past 24 hours had been full of strange and sudden twists and turns, beginning with the first feast of Esther, followed by the king's sleepless night, which perhaps was due to eating too much food at the banquet. That in turn led to the recall of Mordecai's good deed and his decision to reward him the very next morning. Mordecai's unexpected exaltation overnight was a sharp contrast with the crestfallen Haman, whose wicked plan to get rid of Mordecai, hatched on the same night, complete with the erection of gallows, was now in a stalemate, because it was overtaken by events that he had not expected. What a remarkable reversal of fortunes in just 24 hours. But for Esther, Mordecai and their people, the best was yet to come. when tragedy was to be turned to triumph as the tables were stunningly turned. Watch out for that in the fifth and final part tomorrow, when Esther finally reveals her true petition before the king. And may you continue to be refreshed by God's presence and reached by His wonderful word.
When we become so self-absorbed, we can become self-deceived to the point of mistaking our thoughts and ways for God's thoughts and ways. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth brings us part 5 of The Sovereign Hand of God. Right now, though, we would love to hear from you, and I have several ways through which you can be in contact. You can send us a text message at 9431-3813, or you can write to us at Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915-714. You can go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there or share some views with some of the other folks you see. Also, I invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program right online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows users to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from their iPhones. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.